Welcome to BioTime, a podcast to help you pass high school biology and understand the science of life. My name is Chris, and I'm your host today. Hey guys, today we will be discussing environmental impacts on enzymes topic 3.3. We will be discussing what enzyme denaturation is, and then we're going to move on and discuss the three main factors that cause denaturation, which the first is temperature, the second is pH, and the third is concentration. Let's get right into it. Let's first start by discussing what denaturation is. So denaturation is when the structure of a protein breaks down. This results from when the bonds inside of a protein are broken down by external factors. When bonds such as hydrogen bonds or ionic bonds are disrupted, the shape of the protein is going to be altered, leading it to become entirely dysfunctional, or it's just going to work less efficiently. Because remember that a big topic or big concept is that the shape of a protein is going to dictate its function. So the moment it becomes misfolded, the protein is going to run into some trouble. But if the denaturation is just minor, it's possible that the protein can still function, but it's just not going to be as efficient as it could be. All right, but major denaturation will lead to a protein that completely does not work, and in this podcast, we're going to specifically focus on the effect of denaturation on enzymes, which are a type of protein. And now that we understand the general gist of what denaturation is, let's move on to how temperature affects an enzyme's functions. Each enzyme functions at its own optimal temperature, whether it be 30 degrees Celsius or 100 degrees Celsius. But when the temperature is raised above the optimal temperature, the enzyme structure will begin to break down as the heat breaks the bonds apart. Let's explore why this happens. And in order to understand, we need a quick review of chemistry. Often when we think of temperature, we think of a number like 40 degrees Celsius or 30 degrees Fahrenheit. But what this number actually represents is how much a molecule is moving or vibrating, or in other words, the kinetic energy of a molecule. The higher the temperature of a molecule, the faster the molecule is going to move. The colder the temperature is, the slower a molecule is going to move. So now let's get back to how this affects enzymes. So enzymes are made up of many different bonds, but the main type is hydrogen bonds, which are a very weak type of bond. So as the temperature rises and the molecules begin to move around faster and faster, at some point, the bonds are going to break. And once these bonds are broken, the structure of the enzyme weakens until, like, when it reaches a point, the structure is going to collapse. And if you've ever wondered why a fever is so dangerous, it's because the high temperature brought by a fever will denature your body's enzymes, leading them to become dysfunctional, and you would end up dead. So you can see how often, if you go to the hospital for a fever, sometimes people are put in an ice bath, and it's to lower that temperature so that you don't reach a point where your enzymes are going to denature. So that's pretty cool. Now let's move on to the second effect, which is pH, and we'll see how pH affects denaturation. To give a reminder on what pH is the level of hydrogen ions present. When pH is higher than 7, it's basic, and when it's lower than 7, it's acidic. The reason why an abnormal pH disrupts an enzyme is due to the structure of an enzyme. An enzyme is made up of amino acids, which each have a charge. These charges all play a significant role in maintaining the structure of the enzyme. And when pH disrupts these charges, the enzyme will break down. This can denature essential components such as the active site, which means that the enzyme would be pretty much rendered useless. And interesting that I want to add is how our bodies regulate pH. We all know that pH in your stomach and the pH in your kidneys are going to be vastly different, as they have vastly different function. But how are our bodies able to regulate this? Our bodies are able to secrete compounds such as hydrochloric acid, which is secreted in the stomach, or CO2, which is released in the lungs, to regulate pH levels and, you know, maintain them to whatever optimal pH a part of the body needs to function. So by producing more or less of these compounds, our bodies can manipulate and maintain the pH levels required. A major topic in the AP Bio curriculum is cellular compartmentalization, and by understanding why our cells need to regulate temperature and pH, we can see how compartmentalization comes in. Each cellular component of a cell requires a different pH and temperature. For example, the mitochondria requires a pH of 7.8 and a temperature of 50 degrees Celsius. And the Golgi, on the other hand, requires a pH of 6.5 and a temperature of 20 degrees Celsius. So you can see that these organelles all have a very different environment to function. So it's vital to have these cellular membranes creating mini compartments for each organelle. As if these cellular membranes didn't exist, each cell would just have the same temperature, the same pH, and nothing would work like that. So we should be very thankful for the existence of cellular membranes. All right, now let's go on to our third and final environmental impact, which is concentration. And more specifically, we're talking about, the amount of substrate and inhibitors present. And these are going to affect the performance of an enzyme. Let's first discuss the effect of concentration in regards to substrate, and then we're going to move on to discussing the effect of concentration in regards to inhibitors. A substrate is what is being binded to the active site of an enzyme. And once it is binded, the enzyme will transform the substrate into a product. And logically, it seems that with higher concentrations of a substrate, there will be more product. With lower concentrations, less product. This is only partially true, as remember that there are a limited number of enzymes in our body. So just because you throw in a million substrates, it does not mean that your reaction will go any faster. And to make this a little more clear, I'm going to try to set up a hypothetical example here. So let's say that one enzyme can pair with one substrate. And now let's say that the cell that we're looking at right now only has one of these enzymes. So if we were to put in a million substrates, or just one single substrate, we can see that the rate of reaction is going to stay the same, as the time that it takes to catalyze a reaction for one substrate, it's the same because you only have one enzyme. The only difference is that in the scenario with a million substrates, there's just a super, super long line of substrates waiting to be catalyzed. And now onto our discussion of inhibitors. There are two types of inhibitors. There's competitive and there's non-competitive. Competitive inhibitors bind to the active site of an enzyme, which means that the substrate is going to be blocked off. And so if you can imagine it, a competitive inhibitor, it's almost like a substrate, but it's a fake substrate. It's going to hog the active site. It's just going to sit in it. So if a competitive inhibitor is sitting in the active site of an enzyme, the actual substrate doesn't have a place to go to get catalyzed. So with a high concentration of these competitive inhibitors, there will be a really low chance that a substrate is going to be catalyzed. All right, and now let's move on to non-competitive inhibitors. And these are quite similar in that they slow down the reaction rate also, but they bind to a different area, and this area is called the allosteric site. The allosteric site is basically any area on the enzyme that is not the active site. When a non-competitive inhibitor binds to an allosteric site, it causes the shape of the active site to slightly alter, making the reaction less efficient, or in other words, slowing it down. So as you can see, with a high concentration of competitive and non-competitive inhibitors, enzyme reactions are slowed down. So to recap what we have reviewed today, there are three main environmental impacts on enzymes. The first is temperature. Temperatures that are too high or too low will alter the molecular structure of the enzyme, leading to denaturation. The second is pH, which is quite similar to temperature. When pH is too high or too low, the charges of the amino acids that make up the enzyme are disrupted, leading to denaturation. And the final environmental impact is concentration. The levels of substrate and inhibitors both affect how efficiently an enzyme can catalyze its reactants. Remember, more is not always better in situations regarding a substrate, as when you add too much substrate, there's simply not enough enzymes to deal with them. This wraps it up for this podcast on environmental impacts on enzymes, topic 3.3. Thanks for listening, everyone.